It has been a turbulent decade here in Vancouver, to say the least.
Check me out, y'all.
Halford and Brock.
In your area.
That's right.
About to cause mass hysteria.
Sportsnet 650.
Hughes a drop. He scores.
I've never seen a young defenseman like Quinn Hughes.
It's halftime.
Horvat with two. Horvat with three.
Patrick. Look at me. I'm the coach.
Hey, yo, it's halftime.
Now Besser off the drift one. Accepted by Patterson. He scores.
It's halftime.
Playoff atmosphere. Look at the boys go. Crank it up. Let's go.
7:01 on a Monday. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff in the morning is brought to you by Able Auctions. If you have business assets to sell, email sales@ableauctions.ca. We are also brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today. Visit your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. Let's go to the phone lines. One of the newest members of the Vancouver Canucks joins us now on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. It is Oliver Ekman-Larson here on the Halford and Bruff Show. Good morning, Oliver. How are you?
Good, how are you?
We're good. Thanks for taking the time to do this. First, congrats on the trade, and I say that because it was pretty widely reported that with the no-trade clause that you had, you would have to waive, and one of the few teams that you were willing to accept a move to was Vancouver. Now, can you tell us, one, why Vancouver, and two, now that it's done, how excited you are to be here?
Yeah, no, it started already after last season, I felt... I really like the team that we have now. I can say that, right?
Yep.
With a lot of young.
Attaboy. Yeah, good work.
Working on that. But a lot of young guys that I really feel like I can help, and I'm super excited to be on the team, and I think I can help a lot.
So tell us about your time in Arizona, because it started out really well, but it didn't end all that well. What happened there? Just what comes to mind?
No, first of all, I'm super happy about my 11 years there, and I felt like I grew as a player and as a person. And I have a lot to thank the Coyotes organization for believing in me and just to be a part of that organization for 11 years. I think that helped me a lot, and that's why I'm here today. But at the same time, it's been some ups and downs. And I know a lot of people think that I've been a little bit worse the last couple of years, but I feel like, I mean, I'm still producing the same amount of points per game, so I don't really feel like it's that bad, but I'm here to prove the people wrong that I'm still a good defenseman in this league, so I'm super excited about the fresh start.
What's it like to come to a city where you are the number one sports story? Because, you know, every one of my buddies came up to me over the weekend, was like, what do you think of him? Like, what's his game like? I'm not saying that they didn't care about hockey in Arizona, but I'm saying that they really care about hockey in Vancouver.
Yeah. Obviously, I love my time in Arizona, and I think the fans are great there. They always treated me the right way, with respect. And I mean, if you didn't play good there, you heard it as well. So, but I'm for sure excited to come to Vancouver when I know the fans are breeding and sleeping hockey there. So it's going to be different for sure. But I'm up for the challenge. And like I said, it's going to be a lot of fun to just be in a hockey town.
We're speaking to new Canucks defenseman Oliver Ekman-Larson here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Oliver, at your peak in Arizona, you were scoring a couple times 20 goals a year. You were hovering around 45, 50, 55 points, so the offense was clearly there. What was it like over the last couple of years transitioning to a style under Rick Tocchet, which just from the eye test when we would watch the games, seemed like a more low-event defensive-style approach to the game?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit different, obviously, playing for Dave Tippett for a long time. And then Talk came in, and it was a little bit different. But at the same time, he wanted me to play a different role. And I kind of stood on the blue line on the power play, and I wasn't really used to doing that before. So it took some time, but at the same time, I'm that kind of guy that if my coach tells me one thing, and that's what I'm going to go out and do. So, but at the same time, I know I can play better as well, and that's why I'm super excited about a fresh start and prove that I'm still a good defenseman in this league.
Oliver, when did you have knee surgery, and how is your knee feeling now?
That was a long time ago. It wasn't really anything serious. I'm glad that I did it. I've been feel really good since I had that surgery. So, it's feeling great.
So overall health is 100%, and now you have to say, like, I'm in the best shape of my life. That's the type of things you say when you come to a new team. Okay, check on all those. I want to talk about the Sedins now, because the Sedins, I think they went to bat for you, and you know they endorsed this move. They're part of the management group now in Vancouver. What kind of conversations have you had with Daniel or Henrik?
No, both of them called me after it was done, and they were super excited to have me in Vancouver, and I think we've been playing together and against each other for a long time, and I feel like they know my game, and they just told me that we believe in you, and we love the way you're playing, we hated to play against you, so it was fun to hear from them and that they believe in me. So give yourself a confident boost a little bit there, so you can always use some extra of that.
We played some audio earlier from Daniel Sedin and Jim Benning, and they both spoke about you being a mentor, and they emphasized on, you know, Oliver's a professional and he goes about things the right way, and we think that that'll be a big help to our younger defensemen like Quinn Hughes and Jack Rathbone. What's that like for you hearing that? Because it's an additional responsibility. There's the, you know, I got to play. I have to play in the top four. I have to play well. You spoke about wanting to have a bounce back and the fresh start. But there's also an added element of this where you're 30 now and you've been in the league for a long time. You're up to close to 800 games. So that all of a sudden becomes something else that you're being tasked to do here in Vancouver.
Yeah, I think it's great. And that's the responsibility that you want. I mean, I've been captain for a couple of seasons in Arizona, so I think I have that in my toolbox already. Now it's just some new guys, and I'm super excited to be that guy that can help other young guys that have been in the same spot a long time ago. But I know what it feels like, and hopefully I can be that guy that they can lean towards a little bit, and if they ever need anything or just talk to or whatever it is, I want to be that guy and obviously do the right thing and be a professional on the ice and off the ice that people can just realize on every single day.
So what's your plans now for the summer, Oliver? When are you going to stay in Arizona for a bit? Are you go to Sweden? Or when are you going to come to Vancouver, your new home?
Yeah, I'm back in Sweden right now, actually. So we said that we were going to talk a little bit more after the weekend here. So probably going to make a decision when and if I'm going to Arizona first to pack up everything that I have there, or if I'm going straight to Vancouver. I don't really know. My girlfriend and I, we have to make a decision on that too. So, I believe it's pretty soon. I'm super excited and want to get going, so I can't wait to get to Vancouver.
It rains a lot here, more than Arizona, and also stay off Twitter. That's my advice for coming to the Vancouver market. Thanks for joining us today,
I'll take
Oliver.
That with me.
All right. Thanks, Oliver. Enjoy the rest of your summer.
Thank you, guys. Welcome
to Vancouver.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Thank you.
Thank you. That's Oliver Ekman-Larsson, newest Canucks defenseman here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. We need to get into some of these other Canucks conversations here, Jason, because we talked extensively about the trade, and make no mistake, it was a blockbuster, and it's largely going to be the defining trade of the Benning tenure because it encapsulates so much.
Mm-hmm.
The correcting the mistakes of previous free agent frenzies, the need to address several gaps on the team, and the fulfillment of a promise to be aggressive. I mean, you cannot argue that Benning told the truth when he said, I'm going to go out and I'm going to be aggressive this summer. When that trade broke, the instant reaction almost universally was whoa or wow. And that was from people in this market, industry folk across the NHL. It really grabbed attention because it is a big move and a big risk.
And congrats to you. And you called the fact that they were going to trade that ninth overall pick. And we had a poll question on Friday. Was it Friday? It was one of those days.
See.
Will the Canucks keep or trade the ninth overall pick? And like what, over 80% of people were on keep?
Mm-hmm.
But we talked about this and they didn't have much else to trade.
Right.
That had a lot of cachet or a lot of value. I mean, they could have traded Besser, but then you create a problem by trading Besser. You could have traded Rathbone, but they need Rathbone.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all in on next season.
Oh yeah,
they really are.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they do well and they have a good season and they make the playoffs and maybe even make a run in the playoffs, then great. Like this, you're positive about the team going forward. If they don't, though,
mm-hmm.
then essentially you've had a bad year, and you've got Oliver Ekman-Larsson on the books. And if they don't make the playoffs, there's a pretty good chance that Oliver Ekman-Larsson hasn't been very good. Mm-hmm. So the argument will be, well, this was a bad year anyway. Why didn't you just accept that you were going to have a challenging year and ride out the last years of Erickson, Beagle, and Roussel,
mm-hmm.
and then you could have made some changes without being encumbered by another contract, and they will, believe me, people are already saying, is Oliver Ekman-Larsson the next Louis Erickson? Same age. Erickson was 30 years old when he joined the Canucks, had a six-year term. Ekman-Larsson is 30 years old. Mm-hmm. He has 6 years left on his contract. And I think there are way more questions about Ekman-Larsson's ability as a hockey player right now mm-hmm. than there were as Louis Erickson's. Remember, Louis Erickson came to town. He was a 30-goal scorer in Boston the season before.
You know, it's funny you bring those two up because the expectations between the two, they're a lot different. Because when Louis came here, remember, everyone thought that they were slotting a surefire bet 30-goal scorer to play alongside the Sedins when the deal was signed.
Yes.
Remember?
Yes.
That was it.
Pratt said 40.
With Ekman-Larsson, it's a lot different because the questions are already out there. There was no questions about Erickson was a safe bet. Remember when that deal was signed. He was a consistent.
The assumption was that the Canucks were going to get 3 or 4 years of good production
right.
and then maybe the back end of the contract will be a problem.
So it creates an interesting dynamic in that regard. Now, I'll say one final thing about the trade here before we can move on to some other things. From a purely selfish standpoint, I am glad that this trade got done.
This is it something new?
What? Not that, but it makes the team far more interesting and intriguing going into next season.
For sure.
Because if they had gone and taken Dylan Guenther with the ninth pick and played it safe and then went into next season with Erickson and Beagle and Roussel still on the team and on the books, you would have had to say, all right, they're treading water and waiting for all these deals to come off before they can make a push. And at that stage, I think a lot of people are going to say, well, I'm going to check out for a little bit. Maybe not fully.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I will just stay at this hotel on weekends.
Yeah. I've seen this movie before, and I did not care for this movie.
Don't need the sequel. So from a selfish perspective, you know, are you mortgaging the future? Yes, quite possibly. Is it fraught with risk? Yeah. But is it more
Alfred loves the action.
But is it more interesting and entertaining? Hell yeah.
Yeah.
It absolutely is. I am genuinely excited to see Bo Horvat have a guy like Connor Garland riding shotgun. Do we have the audio on this, by the way? Because Garland wasted zero time.
Garland's going to be a good player.
Talking about playing alongside Horvat. I can only logically assume that the Canucks brass, or maybe even Travis Green, has talked to him and said, look, this spot was here. You're going to get it. You're going to get to play with Horvat, and you're going to get to play with another tantalizing guy in Hoglander. And Garland seemed excited by it. Do we have this audio? This is Connor Garland. You're staring. Yes, we do?
I think so.
Connor Garland on playing alongside Bo Horvat as the newest member of the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, he was a guy that we would match up against when we had come to Vancouver, and it's just a hard guy to play against. He's so reliable defensively and, kind of makes him a special player is how he's just as good on the offensive side. So that would be an awesome, guy to play with. Be able to get him the puck and play my game and have a guy who's so good defensively take care of that side of the puck. So you look at their whole lineup, there's a lot of guys that I'm excited to be able to have a chance to be on a line with and just want to get to camp and be able to compete with them.
So coming up next, I want to talk about the Canucks prospect group going forward because the Canucks just had their draft. We'll talk about some of the guys they did draft over the weekend. They had mostly late round picks, though. They traded away their first round pick. So you're looking at a prospect group right now that doesn't look great, certainly compared to some of the better prospect groups in the league. And we've seen how this can catch up to teams. And I'm just wondering how the Canucks are going to address this going forward, because I know that they had some short-term holes to fill. And they used their draft capital to fill those, and we'll see how those trades and those new players work out. But at the same time, let's assume for the best that the Canucks take a step next year and they get back on their line of progression and they start to improve. Who is now going to fill the spots that come open every year? Because that's the problem that the previous management group ran into. They didn't draft and develop enough young players. And when some of the other guys got old or too expensive to keep, there was no one there to fill their spots. So I think this is going to be a focus for the organization going forward. We'll take a look at some of the new players that the Canucks have in their organization and just their prospect depth chart as a whole. It's the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Not having monthly fees means no monthly fee increases. Switch to a Simply Financial no-fee checking account and earn yourself $200. Conditions apply. Visit simply.com.
/7:24 on a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Two fantastic companies to tell you about. I never mention them. The first is Able Auctions. If you have business assets to sell, you know who to email. That's right. It's sales@ableauctions.ca. The second, have you ever heard us mention the Dilawri family of Acura dealers? If not, pay attention. They have three dealerships to serve you better. North Shore Acura. It's in the North Shore Auto Mall, right next to the Orange Julius, across the street from Colonel's. Acura of Langley, right by the Langley Bypass, and Burrard Acura at 730 Terminal Avenue. Go check them out today.
Did you watch much of the draft?
Nope. Okay. Once they traded the pick, yeah. I watched a ton of it. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. But once they traded the 9, I was like, I'm out.
How about the Habs picking that guy?
Logan Mailloux?
How dumb was that?
Yeah.
I'm not going to get on a big... there's been enough moral outrage out there. I mean, I thought it was
ridiculous
what they did and the arrogance that it took to draft that guy and then have pretty much no answers for... did you watch that interview with Trevor Timmons?
Yeah, Trevor Timmons and assistant his 15, GM. 15 seconds of silence. Look, we should. You're not laughing at the situation because it's not really funny.
I'm laughing in like a caustic kind of way. Like I cannot believe that they did that.
Well, I would say incredulous that they did it. Like that was the laughter for me. I was like, okay. I don't know what the end game here for Montreal was, other than a really caustic play to extract value from the draft.
That guy better be good.
Well, here's the thing. There is nobody advocating for this trade in the aftermath.
The draft.
There is not a single pundit that covers the team. There wasn't a single article that I read. There wasn't a single television stand-up that I saw.
The Habs had so much goodwill. Their fans were back in love with them. They just went to the Stanley Cup final. And then they draft this kid. And don't tell me, like, what, he doesn't deserve a second chance? He said himself, don't draft me.
Mm-hmm.
He was trying to be accountable for his mistakes by saying, look, I deserve to pay a price. Mm-hmm. And then the Habs went, nah, we're going to take you anyway.
And in the aftermath, I think it only underscores that this was a bad, bad decision. Because on occasion, you'll have one or two people go to bat for you, or some people other-siding it, being like, well, look at it from this perspective. Nobody's doing that. I don't know what the ramifications are going to be. I'll say wide-ranging. It's a terrible look for the National Hockey League. One of their marquee events, televised on ESPN for the first time, to have that happen.
Good thing the draft wasn't in Montreal, as it was supposed to be this year.
And I would say that there needs to be a lot of questions answered in the aftermath that haven't really been adequately answered.
Well, you know, the pick was approved by ownership. They wouldn't have made that pick without approval of everyone in that Montreal Canadiens organization.
If that's the case, then there needs to be some sort of clarity on why the decision was first, why the idea was broached, mm-hmm. how it was presented to ownership, and then why ownership said, okay, let's do this. Because part of it right now is it doesn't make any sense that the player...
Do you think it almost makes it harder on... Now look, everyone's thoughts should be with the victim in this case, but we do want some semblance of redemption mm-hmm. for Logan Mailloux. We do. No one wants to ruin this kid's life forever. A lot of the time you can use these experiences for good, and you can kind of play with some, or live your life with a little bit of, I don't know, a little bit of guilt or a little bit of a feeling like, look, I owe society essentially, and my family and my friends, I owe them. I'm going to be a good person and I'm going to try and do good things. We all make mistakes when we're young. Some mistakes are more serious than others, but nobody wants to say, no, you don't get a chance anymore. You're done. But he was going through this process and he said specifically, do not draft me because I need to grow and I need to become a better person. And I think whether he said this outright or not, I need to be punished in some way for my actions. And then the Habs go, nah, we're going to take you anyway.
So that was right at the tail end of the draft. So you were asking earlier, did I watch a bunch of the draft? I wasn't as dialed in as I normally would have been, again, because the Canucks flipped out of 9, and I was just kind of watching as a curious observer at that point. The Canucks did make a series of picks, and if I'm trying to sum this up so that we're paying attention to the listener right now probably doesn't want a really lengthy deep dive on the 6th and 7th round picks. A broad overview, it seems like the entire draft class after the 9th pick moved out is going to be reliant upon the Belarusian, Danila Klimovich. I think I got the pronunciation correct there. Klimovich, who Jim Benning saw at the U18s playing for Belarus. Now, one of the weirdest draft profiles I've ever heard because he spent the majority of the year playing in the Belarusian Junior League, which is not exactly a hotbed previously of NHL draft picks.
And he didn't even really do all that well there.
And then he goes to the U18s and lights up the tournament. Now, this is something that probably happened quite a bit during the pandemic scouting season, is you'd see someone play one night or maybe one tournament or maybe one set of games and say, eh. And then the next one, you're blown away because everything was very erratic across junior hockey last year.
Is there any concern that Klimovich or Klimovich. Great. Another guy we don't know how to pronounce.
I'm going with Klimovich.
Klimovich was just had himself a great tournament, and the Canucks happened to be there because we all know Jim Benning was there. I think Todd Harvey was there.
Yep.
He's in charge of amateur scouting now. And they were like, wow, I've seen five games of this guy. I've seen enough.
Yep. And they were intrigued by the talent, and it was the 41st overall pick.
I'm sorry.
Yes, what?
Doesn't that seem like an incredibly ignorant way to scout talent, if that's what we're going off of?
Well, they did. Well, they did say that they once they kind of zeroed in on his game, they're like, "Oh, we're going to watch more of him." It wasn't just in this tournament. I'm sure they tried to find some sort of video of his previous games. But I don't know if it's arrogant, but it's risky.
Well, no, the counter argument to that would be that whatever he showed at that tournament is going to be more relevant because he was playing against the best of the best. That under 18 tournament was apparently loaded with kids that were all draft eligible. So it said, can you really take into account that he might have taken his foot off the pedal playing in the Belarusian Junior League? And then when he got the chance to go up against draft eligible peers. I mean, that's why they always say, like, a fairly decent indicator, not necessarily the draft because you're past your draft year, but what you do in your early years of the World Juniors, because that's going to essentially parlay into playing at the highest level at that level as it goes to the NHL.
Here's a question. Is he now Klimovich? Yeah. Is he now the Canucks' top prospect? If you're not going to count Podkolzin, and you're going to say, okay, he's graduated, Rathbone, Hoglander, all those guys are NHLers now. Is this guy now the Canucks' top prospect because he's a second rounder and he's a wild card?
He is one of them, for sure.
Well, no, is he their top prospect? Yes or no?
I don't know right now, because what would you put him over Jet Wu, who was also a second rounder taken around the same time in the draft?
I'd put him over Jet Wu.
Yeah. Why would you do that?
Just because he's newer.
Daniel Klimovich.
That's the kind of analysis you can get right here on the Halford and Brough Show.
Maybe DiPietro. Maybe DiPietro's in there. I'm talking about skaters, though.
Yeah, I know that, but that's the reason I said I can't put him as a lock as the top of the prospect hierarchy is because there's other guys that were drafted in a similar position, second, third round, who all have differing ceilings. I think the understanding here is that Klimovich had a higher ceiling, but at the end of the day, what really matters is how close are you to being an NHLer, and then what are you going to do when you're in the NHL?
Here's what we'll do, listeners, because Halford and I are not prospects experts. Dom, we're going to ask you to book a prospects guest for later in the week, and we're going to compare the Canucks prospect group to others. Like, the rankings always come out, the organizational prospect groups. I'd just be very curious to see where the Canucks rank, because this is still, I mean, you understand when teams like Boston or Pittsburgh or Washington have lesser prospect groups because they've been in their Stanley Cup window for a few years. They've either traded away picks or they've been drafting, you know, in the first round, they've been drafting in the high 20s. You understand why those teams have lesser prospect groups. Right now with the Canucks, you're looking at this group, and sure, like the Canucks have lots of good young players on the NHL team, and that's important, obviously. But you always need the fresh injections. You always need those injections of youth, of talent, of enthusiasm on your cheap ELCs. You constantly need, like, Horvat and JT Miller are UFAs soon.
Yep. I know. And what you're saying is all accurate. What the Canucks have done, it's funny because there's so much risk and there's so much pressure with all of these moves. So internally, from a scouting perspective, what the Canucks have done have put a lot of pressure on their junior scouts and their European scouts to unearth talent without having the benefit of a lot of picks and high picks. They're going to have to try and mine talent from places where they normally don't find it or where you're normally not hitting home runs. And it goes back to what we've said. Can you find value? Fourth, fifth, sixth rounds. That's what they're going to have to do. Make no mistake. Everybody in this organization now has a significant amount of pressure on their shoulders. At the NHL level, the team that you're going to see on the ice next year, it's going to be, can all these moves that Benning made turn into a playoff caliber team? Because that's the goal for them. Ekman, Larson, Garland, Dickinson. Are they going to be able to fill those spots and push this team to the playoffs? There's a lot of pressure there. There's a lot of pressure on Jim Benning because he's put a lot of eggs in this basket and there's a lot of risk. in, you know, foregoing a lot of picks over the last few years, he then has put pressure on the scouting department saying, go find players and be able to fill out these holes that we have for the future and do it sort of on the cheap and in non-conventional ways.
I feel like I'm at the blackjack table and I really need to win, because if I don't win some money, then I have nothing left. That's what I feel like as a Canucks fan.
Yeah,
next season, there is so much riding on next season.
And it makes it intriguing. To be perfectly honest, it makes it way more intriguing. I have not been this, and I'll keep saying intrigued, but I have not been this intrigued by the team in an awfully long time, because there's real tangible stakes here going into this season. If it doesn't turn out well, the fallout could be kind of cataclysmic, but if it clicks, you're talking about one of the greatest job-saving general manager performances in NHL history. If this clicks and this works, Benning pulled magic with that Arizona Coyotes
but
deal.
Let's say it doesn't. Negative Jason will come in there, because we have to always do that. No. But we have to understand the stakes, right? But extend them a little bit, right? Let's say the Canucks have another challenging season.
Mm-hmm.
How many of those young players are going to start getting frustrated? Bo Horvat, again, he's the captain, and he's been in the league for a while now. He's a veteran now. Mm-hmm. He's a veteran player,
yep.
And he wants to win. We've seen players get frustrated before in other markets, like Jack Eichel in Buffalo, or everyone that went through Edmonton, pretty much. We've seen players get frustrated. Then all of a sudden, you're in a situation where, okay, let's say next season doesn't go well. Just supposing it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a new general manager, probably,
mm-hmm.
a new strategy. That general manager is going to come in and make some changes, right?
Sure, but you're going way far down.
I'm just trying to lay out the stakes here.
Let's lay it out this way. You're talking about a young core that might be disappointed. I would counter by saying, if you're a young guy on this team right now, you're probably excited at the additions.
I'm
going to say the quiet part out loud here. I bet you're equally excited by the departures. Okay? Because for me, I'm totally content going through another season of Canucks hockey, not having to watch Roussel and Beagle and, to a lesser degree, Erickson, and quite frankly, Virtanen.
Oh, God.
Okay?
Thank God that's over with.
I am more...
One of the most frustrating players I have ever watched in my Canucks fandom.
So imagine if you're in the room, and you are very cognizant of the fact that a lot of these guys are paid too much to do too little on the ice. Four of them are gone. That is a pretty significant change, regardless of what it does to the dynamics of the room and whose locker stalls beside whose. The reality is on the ice, we don't have, as a fan, you don't have to watch that anymore. You don't have to gripe over any of that anymore. We don't have to go through an 82-game season of just waiting for these contracts to expire. So that was where my mind went yesterday, was think about the departures. Think about the ramifications that might have. There's a real sense of new life and an injection. And again, I am fully cognizant of the fact that this could go badly and that there's a lot of very detailed and pointed metrics that suggest that OEL might not turn out well. And I get that, and I'm saying it out loud so it's on the record and no one can misconstrue what I'm saying. The biggest takeaway I have is that it's a huge gamble. And I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like the gamble. I like the action. I like the intrigue. I like the excitement around it. And that's where I'll leave it.
It's Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Ian McIntyre will join us in the 8 o'clock hour. Please start sending in your What We Learns right now. 650-650 is the text number, the Dunbar Lumber text line. The smart alternative, visit Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Lander or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. One more segment of Canucks talk, NHL talk, then Ian McIntyre, 8 o'clock, then What We Learned, and then Halford takes a nap. It is the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Not having monthly fees means no monthly fee increases. Switch to a Simply Financial no-fee checking account and earn, you all know it, I've told you every break, $200. Conditions apply. Visit simply.com.
7:44 on a Monday. It certainly is summertime. I saw it was a stat that we've had 20 consecutive days of temperatures of 20 or above.
You know
it's
what
a new
I
record.
You know what I did yesterday?
What did you do? You went to the water slides yesterday.
With my girlfriend and her two kids to...
Big Splash?
Big Splash.
Nice. Formerly Splashdown. Rest in peace.
Let me tell you, that's an eclectic group of people at the water slides.
The water slides are a scene.
Is it a good time still?
It was a great time. It was so much fun. Yeah. What? Late 40s.
Sorry? Oh,
wait a minute.
40s.
Early
40s. Sorry. Wait
a minute. Not even late 40s. Mid 40s.
When's the last time you've been? Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. When's the last time you've been? Because you're asking the question. You don't.
Teens.
Oh, okay. Because, yeah, like one, big development, you can drink.
Mm-hmm.
There's
oh,
a
really?
Bar section,
oh, nice.
Which makes it a lot more.
That doesn't seem dangerous at all.
I didn't spend much time. At the end there, I was like, I'm going to need to go to the bar soon. But
yeah.
Overall, I will say that my core strength needs some work because when you start going fast on those slides and then right at the end, you hit a turn.
Yep.
Your whole body feels like it's just like a wet noodle.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's how you're supposed to feel.
They've got some, I will admit, they have some pretty sick slides out there. There's some
I
pretty,
had fun.
Yeah, yeah.
It was
pretty,
hilarious.
It's pretty fun. I'm not going to lie. Once you kind of get past the fact that you're going to tear an abdominal muscle doing it, it's pretty fun.
I wore my hat and sunglasses the first time I rode the slide. I was like, oh, it's not going to be that. When I came out of that slide, I was just like, everything went everywhere. I had to look for my sunglasses for about 5 minutes in the pool as everyone started coming out of the slides as well too. So I was kind of like dodging all these people like coming cannonballing out of the slide. I'm like, my sunglasses.
Yeah. Jason in Cloverdale just writes in, I'm 48. I've never been on a water slide, but if you can drink now, I'll find time. You can't just carry a beer or cocktail around the park.
No,
there's a bar, but it is nice because you can kind of, it's almost like you can kind of dip out of water slide life for a little while and then sit and it's sunny. You have a beer in the sun.
It's kind of like if the P&E met Vegas poolside.
Yeah. That's, yeah.
Playland meets Vegas poolside.
Yeah, there's dogs running around.
The one thing I could never get over, though, is just how insanely unhygienic, like, water slide park hot tubs are.
Yep, that's another one.
Yeah, the hot tub was closed.
Good
gosh. Yeah. All right, let's move into some of the NHL news that happened over the weekend because we don't have time to waste time talking about the water slides when so much news, not even we've handled all the Canucks stuff, but there was a ton of stuff outside the Canucks that went down. Where do you want to start?
I feel like we should start with the Cale Makar contract. All due respect to the Seth Jones trade and contract, I feel like the Cale Makar extension is much more relevant to the Vancouver market. So for those that missed it, Colorado, kind of stealth. No one really knew that they were working on a Makar extension. It was rumored, but they didn't realize it was this far down the road. They announced it the day of the draft. 6 years, $9 million average annual cap hit. It's a big chunk of change. A little bit of an interesting deal. They didn't go the full eight like they could have and bought more UFA years.
Right.
So this takes Makar until he's 28, which essentially sets himself up for if he keeps playing at this level.
Unbelievable payday.
Another really big payday. So you kind of see the math for both sides there. So right now.
So Heiskanen signed.
Heiskanen went 8 years at $8.45 million. Thomas Chabot went 8 years at $8 million. So you're seeing that number, right?
I don't think there's any way that Quinn Hughes can sign that type of deal because I don't think the Canucks can afford to sign him to any UFA years, can they?
Probably not, but I'm just looking at the market and saying, what does this mean, right? What does this dictate?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're Hughes, I would suggest that you want to be in that zone.
Oh, of course.
Now, the counter argument to it is if you bridge... and you inch yourself closer to going unrestricted, suddenly you're controlling the process where you get to decide where you want to go. I mean, I'm not saying he wants to go to New Jersey to play with his other two brothers, mm-hmm. but if that was in the cards, you bridge it out, and then you don't do essentially what Heiskanen and Chabot did, which was sign the max as many years as possible to get the term, to get the money overall. This does bring me to another sticking point that I've had, and I really want to crystallize it now. I think 8 years is too long. I don't think the NHL should have 8-year contracts. I think it should be a max of 5, and then
it makes it way more interesting, I think.
How many of these deals, the mega deals that they got rid of, the 12, 13, 14 year deals, were ridiculous, and it mm-hmm. was a lot of general managers turning their noses up.
Well, that was just NHL. To beat the cap, essentially.
But an 8-year deal, like what we know now about roster turnover, player aging curves, and how like anchorific these deals become at the end, 8 feels like way too long for almost anybody.
But that's why the players like them. There's
so the players love
credits
it.
It's term.
Players well, love it.
Don't NHL players look at what the NBA players are doing right now in their 1+1s or 2+1s?
Matthews did to a certain degree.
Exactly.
With the deal.
Stars will.
The Stars
sure,
will.
Sure, yeah. But I feel like more and more Stars are going to be popping their heads out of the NHL.
Like Makar signing for 6 instead of 8 is like a subtle nod to what you're talking about. Where he's like, I'm not going to go the full pull. I want to give myself a chance to hit unrestricted free agency at 28. I mean, realistically.
Well, when's Austin Matthews going to hit UFA? When he's like 25 or 26?
I think it's when he's 26, 27. Yeah. That's the idea behind it, mm-hmm. is that when you sign that second contract, people aren't going to be scared off of the fact that you're 30 years old.
And has the Hyman deal been signed yet?
Not yet.
With Edmonton?
Right, and that's the problem, is when these guys get to free agency, and they do it for the first time in their careers, everyone wants to score big. And what's the way you score big in NHL free agency? Mm-hmm. Max term, big money. Get it.
I don't think it's good for the league. And I think even Gary Bettman would acknowledge that it's not good for the league when you've got so many players, so much money allocated right now. Someone should add up all the money that is being allocated to a player who is either like not playing or just bad. Because he got old.
Like, it stinks for Ekman Larson that he's defined by that contract currently. Now, he signed it, don't get me wrong, and he's probably not crying about it because he's making a lot of money. But an 8-year deal that starts to turn like milk getting close to the expiration date after 2 or 3 years, it's not really good for anybody. It's not.
The other team that I think everyone was watching this offseason, or has been watching and will continue to watch, is the Buffalo Sabres. They made a couple big trades. Ryan Hart goes to the Panthers, and Ristolainen, who we actually talked about on Friday as we were wondering if that might be a target for Jim Benning, went to Philly, but still no Jack Eichel deal yet. I believe Sabres GM Kevin Adams said he's more than prepared to have Eichel on the roster next season.
And then
Jack Eichel's camp went, we don't agree with that. We don't agree with anything right now with the Sabres.
I believe it was a joint statement by both of his agents. For like, just to emphasize this, neither of us believe what Kevin Adams is saying to be true.
Who's going to be on the Sabres next year? Like, who's there?
I don't know. Because, yeah, Risto's gone. Reinhardt's gone. Eichel, presumably, even if he's on the roster, he'll have surgery.
He's not going to play another game for the Sabres.
No, like, he will. No way. There's a possibility he gets surgery and is on the Sabres roster, and then they move him later.
Now, they do have a lot of cap space.
Yep.
Because they've traded away all these players that make money. Still have Skinner and Okpozo, mm-hmm. and I think combined, those players are like $15 million.
Yep. Owen Power obviously won't be there. He's going to Michigan.
Who's
going to
be on this team? Who's going to be worse, Buffalo or Arizona?
Well, I do wonder if Buffalo starts to turn into Arizona and becomes a bit of a dumping ground for some of these contracts. Because right now, Arizona's got Andrew Ladd, Louis Erickson. The two of the worst contracts from 2016 are currently residing in Arizona. Beagle was a dump. Roussel was a dump. So, I mean, I wonder if Buffalo is saying, hey, we can get in on this action. Because remember, previously, we thought Seattle was going to be the one that was best positioned to take advantage of all these contracts. And they still could be. Awfully quiet on the Seattle front, though. I don't really know what's going on. I assume now that there are going to be players in free agency, or maybe they're just going to sit back and wait even further. But there were no big splashes from them at the entry draft. No big transactions done, aside from taking Matty Beniers. So I'd be curious to see what Ron Francis does. By the way, before we move into the 8 o'clock hour, there is one thing of note today, and you'll see more and more news on this front. Qualifying offers are due for restricted free agents across the NHL. 5 p.m. Eastern, so 2 p.m. our time. So the Peep Show will probably have some interesting things to chew on. For example, Edmonton already announced that they didn't make qualifying offers to Jujhar Khaira and to Dominic Cahoon. So they become unrestricted free agents and are free to sign wherever they choose.
The Canucks have got to sign Khaira.
Friedge has
got to sign him.
Friedge has a quick blog out overnight saying that he thinks there could be a lot of intrigue on who's not getting qualified because it's an easy way for teams to shed salary. They just walk away.
Is Zadorov part of that conversation? Does he need a qualifying offer in Chicago and maybe they're wondering about him?
Right, and I think the idea is that you qualify him and that you don't just let him walk for free because I think they still see him as an asset that they could get something in return for.
Okay.
Because Zadorov, for me, when I look at the Canucks and I think about what Jim Benning said about getting another Russian in the door to help out Podkolzin with his transition.
That makes sense.
Given that they have,
he's a big boy.
Given that they have a spot on defense, that makes sense to me. But again, everything with the Canucks right now comes down to, can the money work?
And he's a left side guy, isn't he?
Right.
Can he play the right side?
Who knows? If in a pinch, maybe. Who's to say, really?
Skate over to that side, and now that's your side.
Ian McIntyre coming
up. Look, I can
do it. Ian McIntyre coming up next. Canucks reporter right here as we continue the conversation. Your home of the Canucks. It's Sportsnet 650.